We heard the Anderson and Rowe piano duo playing Viva La Vida by Coldplay, and I picked this particular piece to play because I love the video so much.
Yes.
Welcome to WLRH, Greg Anderson and Elizabeth Joy Rowe. So much fun to watch the videos, and why don't you describe that video to our audience? Maybe you haven't seen it. What was happening there?
We filmed it at a university in Texas, and they allowed us to shove out onto their sidewalks a couple 7-foot Steinway pianos.
Yes, okay. You had me there.
So we started with that, and then we start playing this piece, and slowly throughout the video performance, students come exploring, you know, with a bit of mystery and curiosity, and then by the end of the video, they're all dancing along, and it's like several different styles of dancing occur.
Yeah,
just because
those break dancing.
And, yeah. It's a little taste of everything.
Right. I was watching, and I was thinking, they're just going to sit there and play pianos in the middle of a college campus. But I said, certainly the kids are going to be curious about it. And I was wondering how you're going to keep them away. But you didn't. Did they just spontaneously gather around and perform and dance?
We love the idea of inviting people into the musical experience and, of course, attracting new and younger audiences to classical music. And so that was a perfect manifestation of our mission to make classical music a powerful and relevant force in society. So we're like, let's bring the music out of the concert hall. And bring it onto a place where, you know, the collective, you know, public can really enjoy it and see that it's something that's celebratory.
Right. I did a lot of homework and thoroughly enjoyed doing my homework. But the information that's on your website says that you were working to make classical music a relevant and powerful force. Yeah, define relevant.
Relevant to us means it means that the music that you're listening to feels like intimately connected with some part of your life. We never want the musical experience to feel divorced of the 21st century. Even if we're going to play a piece that was composed several hundred years ago, the only way we're going to play that on a concert or in our recordings or in a video is if we can find a way to make it feel like this is absolutely necessary in society in the 21st century.
That's right. And we're also fascinated by the humanity of music, whether it was written 300 years ago or 3 years ago, and that there are certain timeless human experiences that artists of all genres pay tribute to in their art and their creations. And so we shy away from this idea that, you know, this quote-unquote great music should merely be worshipped and almost, you know, not touched.
It's not a museum piece.
Exactly. A lot of people treat it that way. And while there are pieces that are incredibly profound and transcendental, a lot of this music was written by composers who suffered and who are very human and fell in love and were going through war and a lot of things that we can relate to as a 21st century society.
And it stays fresh and new, always. So I did, like I said, a lot of homework. And one question that I didn't see asked in any of the interviews and YouTube videos I watched, nobody asked you, and this was on my mind, how do you have time to do all this?
Oh, thank you. It's always nice when somebody recognizes how much work we put into what
yes.
we do, because we try and give it this air of just, like, ease.
Oh, no, you didn't just toss that off.
But
yeah.
In any performance, I mean, I would say half of the pieces we perform have been either composed or arranged by the two of us, and that takes a tremendous amount of time and work. And then these videos, we film, conceive of them, we direct them, we edit them ourselves, and that also takes enormous amounts of time. We've been on tour this past week and played about 7 performances, but every single night we've been staying up really late. Just the other night, went to bed at 6 a.m. because we couldn't tear ourselves away.
I'm at work at 6 a.m.
we were editing a new music video that we're super excited about, but it's kind of the best time for us to work is while we're touring because we can share ideas with one another and bounce ideas off. And so I guess we just kind of stay up late.
Well, not only that, but even on the planes and on the train rides, you know, Greg's got his laptop propped on his lap and I'm leaning over and, you know, we're doing stuff when we're on tour.
Mm-hmm.
And even a lot of the ideas that we have for these music videos happen best when we're in the air. I think there's something magical and suspended and slightly delirious when we're thousands of feet above ground and we're just sort of brainstorming and daydreaming And so I would say that there's no like hard start or stop to our creative lives. Like even if we're not on tour, we're constantly creating and working. But yeah, there are more elements to our career than perhaps your typical piano duo.
Right. And I know you met at Juilliard, but what was it about each other that said, hey, let's go create these groundbreaking videos and do this interesting music? What?
Well, everything started with the friendship when we were just fantastic friends and so excited to see each other every day. And so it just only made sense that we'd spend more time together while doing what we do professionally, that is playing the piano. We didn't even like piano duo as a genre too much when we started,
really?
But we just liked spending that time together. And there was a real musical energy and friction and chemistry that like erupted very quickly as we started playing together, and that was so attractive. But I think what really held the duo together is that shared mission we've been mentioning, this idea that music's place in society was super important, and we as artists had the opportunity to really transform people's lives with it. And so that has what's held us together now for 17 years as a duo.
Wow.
And 19 years as friends. And of course, a part of that mission helps us with these music videos that we make to excite and to energize young audiences into the world of classical music.
And we also are lucky to possess a shared sense of fun and playfulness and adventure, because when we started playing together in 2002, believe it or not, the piano duo genre wasn't a very popular thing, and people
were always
playing
this. No, you put your ladies in bustles. And, yeah.
Totally, or like the sisters like in the living room piano, and it was always the same repertoire being played. And I think both of us were, you know, we weren't planning to turn this into a career, so we were like, let's just try new things and have fun with it. And it turned out to really resonate with audiences, and even our professors at Juilliard were encouraging us to continue keeping it going.
That's wonderful. So we opened with Viva La Vida, but there's also on the program this evening some more classical-inspired music. We'll listen now to a bit to the Carmen Fantasy for two pianos, played by the Anderson and Rowe duo. Having a little bit too much fun off the air here listening to this recording of the Anderson and Rowe duo playing the Carmen Fantasy. You can hear the whole thing tonight live beginning at 7:30 at Trinity United Methodist Church as the Huntsville Chamber Music Guild kicks off its new season. That's going to be on the program, but you were saying that you're opening the program with one of the first pieces you ever played together.
Actually, it was the very first
wow.
piece we ever played together. We sight read it one summer in 2002 at a music festival, and I had played it previously with my former piano teacher, and the opening is like notoriously difficult and challenging to play synchronized. It's very stately, and most all piano duos, when they attempt to do it on first go, it just sounds like you're walking on eggshells, just crackling away at the in synchronized times. But I typewrote it with Liz, and I remember I stopped her after the first page. I was like, what was that? Because it was like perfectly in sync. I was like, are you playing? I would have to like look over, and she was in fact playing just perfectly with me. And that was like that first signal that there's something going on here that's mm-hmm. pretty special. So we're starting tonight's program with that piece. It's Brahms' Variations on a Theme by Haydn, one of the great works for two pianos.
One of the things I enjoy about watching chamber musicians is how they communicate with each other. So what's going on with y'all? I mean, what sort of frequency are you on?
Yeah, it almost feels as if Greg is my brother from another mother.
Uh-huh.
It's this nearly telepathic communication that happens when we're on stage, just by virtue of being so close as friends and having played together all these years. There's this spontaneous freedom that can happen when we're in performance, and even in rehearsal. We actually don't analyze things too much verbally because we're just constantly listening to each other and open to each other's ideas. And also, as you were saying, like I think we're tuned into a very similar frequency, which is interesting because both of us are very different people and even musicians. Mm-hmm. But there's something maybe about that yin-yang combination that sparks this sort of electricity. And people remark that we have a lot of chemistry, and it's not something that you can contrive. It's just there.
And do you explore solo careers as well?
We do. We both have.
And how do you have time?
Yeah. Sort of has to take a bit of a back burner.
Yeah.
Our sort of our main project is touring as a duo, but we certainly play solo repertoire, have solo recordings, and play chamber music with other musicians. But yeah, it's all a matter of trying to find the right balance, and we're so lucky as pianists to have such rich repertoire at mm-hmm. our disposal. So for now, you know, we're kind of in duo mode.
Well, yeah, there's the standard piano repertoire. Then there's your repertoire. How do you know what to bring in to play?
It's actually a really fun process because I'm going to give Liz credit on being the musician who's really attuned to what happens outside the classical music world. And she has pieces that she occasionally shows me and that she loves. And I hear it from a very like classical mind frame or mind point of view. Like tonight's program, we're going to play Paranoid Android, mm-hmm. One of Radio's pieces from their album OK Computer. And I had never heard of that song, but Liz showed it to me. And my classical brain just like fired off and said, oh, wow, there's so much we could do with this. Like, mm-hmm. and treat it almost like a classical symphonic over-the-top showpiece. And that's ultimately what we did. In other cases, we just play pieces that we just desperately and passionately love and find a way to arrange it. But sometimes we see something really wonderful and put a lot of potential for the two piano or piano forehand genre latent in these pieces, and that's what tells us to bring it out into the foreground.
Yeah, we're rather omnivorous with our musical tastes. We're not specialists, and so we'll play everything from, you know, pre-Baroque to current pop music, and it's just, you know, we might as well reflect the largesse of music that's out there in our concerts, because again, this ties into our 21st century playlist attitudes, mm-hmm. where you see a whole mix of different genres and different artists and styles, and that keeps music so alive and refreshing for us.
Ultimately, we have to hold it all together on a program or on an album, because when you have that much variety, it can feel a bit like whiplash.
Yeah.
But we like tonight's program, we have several kind of themes going on. The first half is classical. The second half it features elements from the pop world. But there's a sense that everything old becomes new again, the sense that there's just a multitude of perspectives. And even you see that exemplified in the variations. The first piece are these variations. The simple theme is just turned upside down 9 times. Similarly, we wrote our own set of variations based on Leonard Cohen's famous Hallelujah song. And each variation takes us to a totally different world in that. And so then when we start playing these other pieces, arrangements, you start to get the sense like, wow, there are so many possibilities and so much potential.
And they're all interconnected.
Mm-hmm. And tonight's concert will not be a forehand not sitting side by side, which you can do. You have done in the past. But two Steinways in front of Trinity Methodist Church. Ron Roberts, here, grab a microphone. Tell us about the logistics of pulling in two Steinways into the church.
Well, there is a 9-foot there already. So through Steinway Nashville, these folks are Steinway artists, so we were able to get another piano brought down yesterday morning from Nashville, and so we checked on it a little earlier today. It was being tuned as we were there. So there's two enormous pianos on stage. So.
Is there a best place to sit in the sanctuary to watch this?
At the piano bench.
But the seats are taken.
Yeah, it's already taken. But for the right price, we might sell a seat. In the Trinity Methodist Church, where the concert appears, the acoustic is really quite wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually love to sit at the back.
Okay.
I think it's very...
Ron has to sit in the back because he giggles too much.
I told you not to talk about that.
But we are having fun, and it'll be a lively concert, I think, that all ages could enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
Bring a young piano student, maybe a piano student who's not that thrilled about their piano lessons. Do you think this would change their perspective?
Yeah, we try and treat every concert as visit like a Pixar movie, so that the grandparents, the parents, the students, and the children are all like equally compelled, but on totally different planes.
Were you always this enthusiastic about playing the piano?
Oh, certainly. I can attest to it. I've known him for almost 20 years. He's always been enthusiastic, and we're both very passionate.
Yeah, and what keeps you going? What keeps this level of enthusiasm up when you can't sleep?
I would say it's the music itself. You know, it's a lot of times on tour we're, you know, not feeling 100% or we're tired, jet lagged, all that stuff. And you're reminded when you're playing this music, whether it's, you know, in a rehearsal setting or on stage, of how beautiful and amazing and astonishing it is. And it sort of fills you with this energy and inspiration. And same thing when we're making these music videos, it's the stuff, the art, the creativity itself that sort of fills you with this fire and this energy. And so, and also our audiences give us a lot of joy.
I think in addition to that, we get so excited about what could be. What could be in the music world, what could be with this video or with this particular piece. We hear it and we hear the potential, and so we have to work to get it to that place. And we're just kind of driven by fulfilling what our imaginations are already seeing.
Well, I was transfixed by the first video I watched, which is, I have the music queued up here, Let It Be. Tell me about your interpretation of that piece. It's not like anything I'd ever heard before.
So the original piece is filled with undertones of gospel, and in our version we take that to the foreground so that we have some sort of avant-garde dueling gospel piano version of the piece that should take you to church.
Yeah, we were also inspired by the original, just kind of, there was a music film of Let It Be, and we loved how the Beatles themselves looked like they were almost just kind of like, it was like a work in progress of them just rehearsing the song and performing it in this somewhat natural, organic vibe. So that's what we were trying to reflect in the music video, and above all, the sense that the song is this almost like redemptive and hopeful anthem, that in times of darkness you can find, you know, wisdom or truth in a higher power, or just in, you know, Paul McCartney was sort of calling upon his mother Mary to kind of give him light in times of challenge. And so it has a sort of joyful feel. Thank you.